Hello and welcome to the live webinar, Succession Planning, What's in Your Company's Future, sponsored by New Direction Partners, empowered by the Printing Impressions Group. I'm Peter Schaefer, a partner at New Direction Partners, and I'm pleased to welcome you to today's event. Before we get started, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the Help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We'll be addressing select questions during and at the end of the hour. You can send them at any time. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all of the widgets and bells and whistles on this console. Speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all of the widgets on this console do and how you can customize your experience today. Here today to discuss succession planning are two of my partners at New Direction Partners, Jim Russell and Tom Williams. Jim has owned and operated two successful printing businesses in the print and document management industry. At one of those companies, Jim and his father successfully developed a management team to run the business so the owners could focus their time and energy on other philanthropic and nonprofit causes they had passions for. And eventually, he successfully sold those businesses, navigating the challenges of pleasing multiple family members and non-family members who had ownership in the various entities. His thoughts and comments on this topic come from firsthand experience. Also speaking will be Tom Williams. Tom has been involved in printing-related businesses his entire career, working as a teenager in the family print business, as sales manager for a major print machinery manufacturer, as a senior executive and partner at a large commercial finance company supporting the printing and packaging industries, and as a turnaround and workout professional for a major lender invested in the printing industry. Tom is a member of the NAPL Soderstrom Society as well as a past president of the International Printers Supply Salesman Guild. He's an RIT graduate and holds an MBA from the University of Chicago. He brings over 45 years of industry experience to New Direction Partners. And with that, I will turn it over to Jim and Tom.
All right. Thank you, Peter. And this is Jim Russell, and thank you, everyone, for joining us this afternoon. We also want to quickly thank Printing Impressions and Packaging Printing Magazine for sponsoring and hosting this event and coordinating it. The slide that's on your screen now is our agenda for the day. And just to go through it briefly, we're going to spend just a couple minutes at the beginning talking about the industry and some trends we're seeing. Then we will talk about succession and continuation and define those topics. We'll spend some time talking about management succession planning from both a estate planning purpose and also from an ongoing operational purpose. And then we'll get into what we see as a worthwhile planning process and how you would go through that in your own business. Through the process, we'll tell a couple of stories from real life experience, some good and some not so good. So hopefully some of our real life experience will be useful to you. For those of you that are sensitive about the time, this will take about 45 minutes. And if you like to count the slides, there are 40 slides in the program so you can monitor how we're doing. The first slide now is just a quick overview of the market on these first few slides. And this first slide shows the volume of print being sold over the last roughly 20 years from 1992 to 2015. You can see the big drop in 2009 that we all experienced and lived through. And you can see that we've seen a gradual pickup in the commercial print market over the last couple of years, settling in around $85 or $86 billion. This next slide points out the number of facilities or printing companies in the in business going back to 1992, And you can see how we've dropped from roughly 42,000 printing companies to just about 25 or 26,000 in 2014. According to PIA, they are expecting over the course of from 2010 to 2020 that overall industry shipments will drop approximately 7%, but we'll see a decrease in the number of plants of approximately 30%. And so what that means to all of us long term, if their numbers are correct, that PIA long-term outlook is for the number of plants to decline by a larger percentage than the shipments. And if that happens, as the plants decline more than shipments, the surviving plants would, on average, experience an increase in sales. So that's just a quick view on where we kind of see the industry going. And so the question is, how are you going to grow your business? Are you going to wait for others to go out of business, as those slides just implied? Are you going to grow through organic and internal growth? Are you going to grow through product expansion, merge with another printer, purchase another printer, or some other option? And I'm going to turn it over to Tom Williams now to talk about the next few slides. Tom?
Thank you, Jim. As you can see, the industry is shrinking, no surprise to anyone relative to the number of firms. And if we understand the marketplace, it's easy to figure out that we're in a race for the future. If you don't grow, what are you going to do? Are you going to wait for others to go out of business, be the last man standing? There are some companies out there in their geographic area that certainly figure if they can outlast their competitors, they will be the last man standing in their market. Most companies have struggled with organic or internal growth over the last 4 or 5 years. It's certainly an option, but a very difficult one to really manage. Salespeople, good salespeople are hard to find. Many companies have new products and services they're trying to sell, and many of the salespeople are not particularly attuned to selling those products and services. Other options, obviously, for growth would be to merge with another printing company and essentially take two companies in the same market and through the strength of the combined operation be a more significant economical and competitive unit within that market. And another obvious way to grow is to either purchase a printing company or purchase the assets or specific assets of another printing company. If you don't grow, what are you doing? Are you going to let your heirs worry about the future? Perhaps not a great idea. Do you plan to be a survivor and figure it out later? Key question there is, when is it time to figure it out? Or should you become a seller and essentially sell the business and move on? There are two things that everyone can expect to happen in their lifetime. Based on the old adage, as you know, they're death and taxes. You certainly have to plan for both. And to hit the nail on the head, the real question is, what can I do with my business before I die? Obvious options are to sell it, to merge with another company, to give it to charity, to dissolve the operation, gift it to your family, sell it to family members, sell it to key employees, or to establish an ESOP and sell it to all of the employees. Combinations of these options are certainly to be considered as well. But the bottom line is, no matter what you plan to do with your business, the time to make that plan may be now, and you cannot have an exit strategy or a succession strategy without a viable plan. Let's define succession. Here are some dictionary definitions. And I'll just let you read them. I won't read them. And they're continued on the next slide. Now, there are common perceptions, certainly, and the most common perception of succession planning is the end of one era and the beginning of another. Planning for such an event can be very emotional. It can be maddening, exasperating, time-consuming. Sometimes it can be fun, not often. But it can be very rewarding when it's done right.
Thanks, Tom. This is Jim again, and we're going to spend the next few minutes talking specifically about management succession planning and how to develop a team within your company to manage it, perhaps while you still own it or perhaps in an effort to prepare it for sale. But I think the first step in this process for any owner is to do a thorough SWOT analysis of the existing talent that you have in your business. And ask yourself the question, do we have the needed talent or skills in the business now? Do I have people that are ready for the next job I want them to have? If they're not ready now, can they be ready with some coaching and training? Can I get them prepared to handle the job that I want them to do? Or are they not ready and coachable? And if that's the case, then I need to look outside the organization to find the right people. From our experience, good management succession planning starts with the hiring process. And it's important that you recruit, retain, and develop the most talented and superior employees if you want to have a good succession plan and hand your business off to other people to run it for you. And we're going to spend a few minutes on these next few slides because I think there's a lot of important points here. And number one, I'm a big believer in pre-employment testing. In the businesses that our family owned, we used the caliper test and the Wunderlich test for every position that we hired for. And those are just two brands of testing. There are certainly other ones out there that you can use. But it really helps you identify, the testing helps you identify strengths and weaknesses of prospective employees before you even hire them. And analyzes their personality to determine if they have the right skill set to do the job that you're going to hire them for or request that they do. So if you're not doing pre-employment testing, I think it's the first step to building the right team. And even if you've already got a team in place and you're contemplating elevating someone to a new position or new responsibility, these tests can help you determine if they're qualified and have the skill set to do those jobs. So take the testing as a serious way to begin the planning process. Number two, don't be afraid to hire people smarter than yourselves. We all come into our business with a certain skill set. Maybe you are great at sales, or you come from the production side or the finance side. But certainly in the other areas of the business, it's critical that you hire people who are more knowledgeable and more experienced, perhaps, than yourself in certain key areas. So be sure that you don't shy away from hiring people that are smarter than yourself. Another thing we would recommend is to share career paths across the organization. And we all come from different sized businesses, so this is certainly a little easier in a larger organization than a small one. But any time you can have someone work in a different area for a month, for 3 months, for a half a year, and learn what goes on. Have a salesperson spend some time in production. Have a production person work the phones in customer service for a couple months so that they understand what the other jobs entail. These are ways for people to get a better sense of the overall business and how the whole organization operates. I live in the Metro Detroit area, and of course the big three automakers are kind of dominate the landscape of employment. And among my friends, there's only certain levels you can go to in the auto companies without having worked overseas. You climb the ladder so far, and that's as far as you can go until you operate in China or Japan or Australia and run a division over there for a couple of years. Most printing companies obviously aren't that big, but the point being, they see it as critical that their key employees understand different aspects of the organization, and we should take that to heart in our printing companies. Another point I would suggest is to allow other departments to identify talent. And what I mean there is your middle management team, if you're large enough to have a middle management team, needs to be willing to point out to you good, talented people they have in their department that may be able to help somewhere else. Do you have a folder operator that might be a great customer service person? Someone in customer service got all the skills to be a great salesperson? That's a fairly common transition in our business. But be sure within your company you're looking for people in various departments to identify talent that can grow the business and take over some leadership roles. And finally, don't be slow or afraid to fire when it's needed. In my own business, when I bought a company, we had just $1 million in sales, and I had a production manager that could take the company to about $3 million, but when we got to that point, he was overwhelmed and not capable of running the business or growing it. So we brought in someone with a little more experience, and we grew the business to the next step and got it to about $6 or $7 million. But then that person was not capable of going to the next step. And so we replaced them eventually and brought in another production manager that took us up north of $10 million. So you need to not be afraid to fire when someone's skill set is holding back the organization. The next thing I would talk about in succession planning is you have to know who, not only who has the skills to grow, but who wants to grow. And a story I share here is not really within the company, but in a deal we were putting together a few years ago in our mergers and acquisition. We had two companies that were looking to merge. One was a little stronger financially, and it was a little larger. And so we met with the owners, and the smaller company agreed that the owner of the larger company should be the president. He should run the company, and the smaller business owner would take a secondary role as production manager or something along that line. And this process dragged on and on for 4 or 5 months, and finally we asked the owner of the larger company, his name was Charlie, said, "Charlie, why are we not doing this? What's slowing it down?" And he said, "I'm tired of having all the responsibility. I'm tired of having everybody coming to me. I don't want to have all the decisions on my shoulder." So he didn't want that responsibility. And we quickly reversed the roles of the two owners. The smaller company owner was willing to run everything, and that deal got done a couple months later. But my point is, within your own organization, when you've identified someone you think has that skill set to grow, make sure that they really want that additional responsibility. Another thing we encourage in management succession is you can't be afraid to share information. I talk to a lot of companies who are very open with their financials and share that information. Talk to many other companies who hold information very close to their vest. And we would just encourage you to share as much information as possible. Share financials with your key people. And share sales numbers in my company. All the people knew what the sales were every day. We posted that. It was public information. But and where this relates to the next bullet point is, are your people earning merit badges? By sharing information with people, they understand what's critical about running their business. And I tell the story one day I was walking through the shop, and I stopped and I was talking to the gentleman that ran our shipping department. He was in his maybe late 20s. I don't think he was even 30 years old. And we're talking, and he said, "Jim, I'm really sorry. I'm really busy today. It's the last day of the month, and we need to ship $50,000 to get to our break-even point." And I walked away, and I thought, I'm pretty happy with that, that our shipping clerk knows where we're at in the month and knows where our break-even point was. So a merit badge to our to that person who understood a lot more than just a shipping job, but understood the big picture. And as it relates to internal succession planning, this bottom quote from Ross Perot, I'm not a huge Ross Perot fan, but I thought this was very valid. "There's no greater honor than to live in the shadow of your son." And whether it's your son or daughter or maybe a non-family member who you brought into your business and you developed them and you helped them grow and you developed their talent, there's no greater reward than seeing someone grow like that in your business. We're moving on now to estate succession planning and how do you handle that. And a lot of these things will cross over. But and they apply to both management planning and estate planning. But as it relates to estate planning, number one, get the timing right, get the planning done, give the next group the best chance of success as possible. And the owner of the company, you have to take responsibility for this because it's your job to ensure that the company continues on successfully. When we talk about succession planning, we really think there's five steps in the process. And those steps are, number one, define, and we're going to talk about each of these individually in the next few slides, but number one, what is the owner's objective? And he or she has to make a very honest and objective assessment of what they want to accomplish. What is the timing? What are the financial implications of the objective, and can the company pull that off or not? Who are the people that need to be involved in the process? And then once you've done that, you do an assessment of the whole process, and you develop a plan. So step number one is defining the objectives. And this is sometimes the easiest to talk about, but sometimes the hardest to agree upon. But you have to go through this process. And we've seen many cases where the owner will say one thing, but then when you get right down to the brass tacks, they realize that they want to achieve other objectives. Every owner wants to take care of their employees, and every now and then we'll see an owner that'll sell his business for maybe a little less because he thinks the long-term solution is better for his employees. But we also see those owners that they'll say they want to take care of their employees, but when it gets down to it, they're out for the top dollar or the highest price or whatever. So the owner has to make a very honest and sincere assessment of what his or her objectives are going forward. But what we would say to you is it's your life and you can do whatever you want. You don't have to do what others expect of you or what you think society expects. We have some owners who, some people might say, take care of yourself, don't worry about your children, it's your business, you built it, take care of you and your spouse, and that's what you need to worry about. And we have other owners that would say, I've got all I need, I've saved prudently, my main objective is to take care of my children or pass the business on to my children or pass it on to my key employees. But you need to make an honest assessment of what your personal goals are in the process. And if we were live with you, we'd ask for input from you here, but this is just a list of some obvious items that an owner might want in a transition. He wants to secure his or his family's financial future. The owner wants to secure employment for his key people. He wants to secure a long-term tenant in the real estate he owns. He's going to depend on that rental income maybe for his retirement. He wants to free up time for other pursuits, or he wants to just effect a smooth transition so he can go out and travel the world. Any one of these objectives could be something that you want to incorporate into your plan because it fits in with your goals and objectives. The second step in the process is to get the timing down. And this is going to vary depending on the age of the ownership of the business. But spell out when the major parts will be decided. For example, maybe the owner wants to control the business until he's 65, but they want to spend the winters in Florida during that time. Or maybe they just have a transition succession plan they want to implement and get completely out of the business. There's all kinds of different objectives, but it's important that we talk about the timing as we go through that process. And if you're younger, maybe you own the business, you're only 40 years old, certainly you want to have it in your will, but you might not be as deep into succession planning as someone that's a little older. You want to have your buyout clauses in place. As you get into your 50s, you might start developing a succession plan. You state what you want to do, how you want to do it. Certainly as you get into your 60s, you might want to get more specific. Your plan is well documented. Many people know about it. Key managers are involved, but you still have control of your business. And certainly, finally, in your 70s, you should have a complete succession plan. Each person's different. Each person has different health issues. Each person has different long-term goals. So where you're at in this process may depend on your age or just your goals in life. And then step three, getting the timing right, it's certainly a major decision. Get it on the calendar. Review the calendar once a year. Revise it if necessary. And make sure you've got reminders in place to follow through. And then step three is the financial aspect of it, and we're going to turn it back over to Tom to talk about that. Tom?
Yes, I'm here. Thanks, Jim. Let's discuss financial considerations. Obviously, a very key consideration is what's my company worth? And our suggestion, of course, is to have a third party do an objective valuation of the company's worth. New Direction Partners does have a valuation practice, and we do have a certified appraisers on staff that certainly have expertise in the printing and packaging industries. What kind of financial position is the company in? This obviously affects the potential longevity, the ability to sell the organization if that's a consideration. What does the cash flow look like and the debt service? They're kind of linked together because obviously you need adequate cash flow to service your long-term debt. When might the opportune time be to start your succession? Another very key decision that has to be made. I actually met with a company last week where the owner's 36 years old, and he wants to sell the business and be out of the business by the time he's 42. Take the money and invest in a different business opportunity. So everyone's situation is different, but obviously it's a subject that needs serious thought and consideration, maybe at any age. a key decision, of course, is you know, when to start the process. And, of course, you've got to be in a situation where you feel comfortable you can achieve your objectives and still afford to invest in the future. How do we value your business? Well, a common convention, obviously, is to value businesses as a multiple of EBIT, earning before interest, tax, depreciation, and amortization, or a multiple of earnings before taxes. Obviously, another way to value your company, particularly if EBITDA doesn't exist or is negative, is the liquidation and earnout value. In today's marketplace, we see a lot of what we call tuck-in transactions, where, in essence, the seller earns out value based on the book of sales that is transferred to the buyer. And that earnout, obviously, is over a period of time, maybe 3 years. And other assets that the tuck-in buyer has no interest in are liquidated, which may be equipment, real estate, et cetera. Businesses can be valued on a percentage of sales basis or the asset approach, where the assets of the business, including real estate, machinery, intellectual property, et cetera, are assigned a market value. One question we always get, obviously, is, you know, what kind of multiples will my company bring in today's market? And here, from our own experience, based on current transactions that have closed in the last year or so, you know, we've tried to summarize what the average multiple is and what the highest multiples we've seen have been. And it varies for various niche businesses, packaging, large format, point of purchase, web to print, obviously, are bringing higher multiples, customized direct marketing, digital printing. And if we look at commercial, we see that commercial multiples are somewhat less. Obviously, there's a cumulative consideration here. And we've shown that if you're a commercial plant not shrinking to the above ranges, you could add perhaps one multiple. If it's a larger company, you might add a multiple of one. If it's greater than 3 million, between 3 and 10, the multiple might be a half. A guideline based on what we see in the marketplace. There are certainly exceptions, but I think these estimates are fairly accurate. People are an important consideration in any succession plan. The first decision, or a key decision that has to be made early on, once you decide that you're going to consider a plan, is who are you going to include in the planning process? Typically, there are stakeholders that should be included. They might be your spouse, your children, key employees that are going to continue to run the business when you begin to remove your day-to-day activities, siblings, parents, et cetera, that could potentially be shareholders in the company. They may not be active in the business, but you may feel that they have, you know, to buy into the plan, obviously. Who do we recommend you not include, particularly in the beginning? Certainly lawyers, people with their own agenda. And you certainly could have people that do have their own agenda that could be a negative influence on any plan that you put together. And, you know, don't forget about the people involved. Don't unilaterally put a plan together without the key stakeholders being part and parcel to it, or it may be doomed to failure. This is just common sense. Too many cooks in the kitchen spoil the broth. Don't get people involved that shouldn't be involved. And obviously, as I mentioned before, you've got to get the key key stakeholders to buy into your succession plan so that it will be successful. Okay, Jim?
All right. Thanks, Tom.
Hey, Jim, before you take over, Tom, somebody has asked if you could provide a little clarification on the chart showing the premiums for the different segments and sizes, et cetera.
Okay.
Yeah, we can go.
Specifically, the question is, what does plus X mean? So I think you want to elaborate. Yeah.
Saying
I can.
Three entries at the bottom of the graph are add-ons to the entries above. So let's say you have a commercial printing operation where we're saying that the multiple we see, average multiple, is 3 to 3.5. What we're saying is take that 3 to 3.5, and if you're a commercial stable printing operation, add maybe one more multiple. So that multiple now becomes 4.5. And let's say you're between 3 and 10 million, add another half. So if you take, we're then getting you up to a multiple on that commercial printing company of 3.5 plus about 1 plus another half. So that brings you up maybe to 5. Does that make sense?
But it does, but Tom, critical to point out that 3 to 10 million is an EBITDA, not just revenue. So you'd have to be a pretty large company to get
it's all,
get
all based on EBITDA, correct. It's not revenue.
Yeah. So hopefully that answers the questions, and if there's other questions, we can certainly talk offline with anybody that needs further clarification on that. Once you've done and you've gone through these first four steps, you've established what the owner's objectives are, you've talked about some timing and have some idea of what the timing is you want to do, you've reviewed your financials and laid out a plan and determined that your company can financially pull off what you're trying to achieve, and you in your own mind have identified a group of people that are key to this process that you want to have involved in that, the fifth step now is to do the assessment. And it's really, this is a tougher process, but our recommendation, and again, every company is a little different, but you probably want to do this off-site. You want to plan to do this over the course of 2 to 5 sessions, depending on how quickly you move in the organization. And what we suggest in the first session, after the owner spelled out his objectives and what he wants to achieve and shared that with the group, that each person in the group would make a SWOT analysis of the company, of the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats that would affect trying to achieve these objectives. And when you've done that, they would go back and do that probably off-site, and then you'd gather again and get together, and each member would pass on their SWOT analysis to whoever's going to moderate this, whether it's an outside party or the owner. The SWOT analysis could be very diverse, and these are just examples of what might be things that are going to affect achieving the objectives. You'd have many more than these, but as examples, internal strengths would be a strong sales staff, adequate financial conditions, digital capabilities, mailing capabilities. Maybe you've got a facility with extra room to grow. You've got a young leadership team. Each company is different, but you list your strengths. At the same time, you're listing your weaknesses and some examples, inadequate financial reporting, our equipment's getting old, there's no obvious leader beyond the owner, there's family issues, there's 2 or 3 owners in the business and they don't all agree on things. What are the weaknesses that are going to affect pulling off the plan? External opportunities might include weak competition. We'd all love to have that. Availability of training. Maybe your business located near a graphic arts school, a college that has graphic arts programs. That'd be a plus. You've got good consultants. The economy's picking up, or you're in a geographic part of the country where business is growing, or you're in a smaller area, but a couple new industries just moved into town. Those would be all external opportunities. And then finally, external threats, another terrorist attack, government regulation, healthcare, crazy Uncle Tom that owns 30% of the company and you don't know what he's going to do. All of these things would be put on the SWOT analysis and by each person individually. And then, as I said a few minutes ago, the facilitator would receive the responses, would compile that into a report, suggest that, as I said, all these sessions would be off-site. And these sessions can sometimes be stressful. You're going to have different opinion. You're going to have a lot of discussion on strengths and weaknesses. Some of this may not be clear. But the facilitator or leader needs to be firm about what you're trying to achieve, sensitive to the emotions of the people. You may have somebody that's always wanted a leadership position, and it comes out through this assessment that they're just not going to get it. And so there will be some difficult issues that you have to deal with up front and honestly. But that would be part of what you would do after the SWOT analysis is done. As I said, the objective of the SWOT is to get everything out on the table. The best-run companies are the ones that are going to have some heated arguments but eventually find common ground. And the objective of these off-site meetings is to formulate a plan with the most relevant assessment of the company, taking in the knowledge and the experience of all of the key players. And from there, you would start to develop the plan. And these next few slides are just going to list the objective is now defined, the financials are in place, the timing's defined. You've now done an assessment of the company, and it's time to build a written plan. And these are next few slides will just be various parts of the plans. Again, yours may have other things in these, but you want to talk about retirement. When does the owner want to leave, and is he selling the business or staying involved? How much money is he going to take? Is he still going to take a full paycheck, a half paycheck, no paycheck? All of these are things that would have to be discussed. What's the stock ownership? Is the stock ownership going to stay the same? Is it going to gradually transfer to family members or management team? Is that going to be sold to them or gifted to them? Is the owner going to hold on to controlling interest so he still has ultimate control of the business? Who are going to be the key people? Who's going to be the president, the VP? What are the terms of their positions? Some of that would include defining their positions. You have a CFO. Well, you're going to put the son of the owner or the daughter of the owner in charge of running the business, and then you make clear to the CFO that's been there a long time that my son or daughter is not strong financially, and so I really need you to guide him and coach him and instruct him in this part of the business. We talked about earlier what's the pay structure of the owner, what are the payment plans for the purchase of the business if that's part of the transition. Talk about life insurance analysis, estate tax analysis, and that's, of course, a big part of it that you would include your CPA on. What are the training needs that we talked about earlier in the presentation today? What are your key employees' weaknesses where they need training on? And you need to set expectations and methods to hold the people responsible. But in summary, anything you want that should be part of the plan should be included in the plan. And what we really like about this method is by the time you're done, everything has been vetted. It not only sets the who in the succession plan, but it also gives a clear business plan for the next owner or manager. It can be used to set expectations. You've included all of the key people, and this process will most likely reduce or hopefully eliminate the number of unexpected situations. So that is our take on succession planning. Yep.
Jim, excuse me. We have a question that is as follows. What if the business has a declining sales trend, but technically skilled employees, good product pricing, but a lot of debt? Would this ideally be a book of business or tuck-in type opportunity?
The short answer to that, without knowing more, would be yes. That sounds like, by definition, of a company that probably cannot be sold for a multiple of EBITDA and is most likely, maybe depending on the revenue size, a great tuck-in opportunity. The owner should still be able to hopefully get something out of the business through a tuck-in sale. And the person that, or the company that might buy it would pick up a book of business. So the short answer, yeah, I think that's a great tuck-in opportunity.
And then a follow-up question is, in your experience, do you find that business owners are frequently too emotionally invested when trying to determine the value of their business?
I would have to say that goes both ways. We do find some owners that are very realistic and understand the marketplace and have a pretty good understanding of EBITDA and the value of their business and its strengths and weaknesses and what a buyer will find attractive. But there are also a number of owners out there who still, you know, for whatever reason, no matter what their business is really worth in the open market, they feel it's worth 20% more or whatever the number might be, but they're unrealistic, and they'll have a lot of prospective buyers visit them, but they're never going to sell it because they're not being realistic about values.
Okay, it looks like we're just about out of time for today. On behalf of New Direction Partners, Printing Impressions, Package Printing, I want to thank you for attending today's webinar. Please be sure to check out the webinar page to get information on all of our additional archived and upcoming webinars. I hope to see you at the next Printing Impressions webinar. Thank you all.